Welcome to Greycast, exploring the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. This podcast is all about bringing the classic World of Greyhawk setting to life through Greyhawk creators, Greyhawk lore, Greyhawk streamers, Greyhawk stories, and of course, the vibrant Greyhawk community of gamers. Thank you for tuning in, and let the exploration of Dungeons & Dragons' most classic and revered setting, the World of Greyhawk, begin now. Welcome, 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 fellow Greyhawkians. It is with much joy and elation I am happy to welcome back our faithful partner in crime. Well, partner in Greyhawk, that is. We're not really doing much crime here, but Mateus, you're back at the mic. Good to see you, friend.
Good to be back.
What on earth happened to you? Is it gray ooze? Was it a pit trap? What befell you that caused you to have to miss our last session?
We added another party member.
New party members will do that. They
new
poop
party
and
members.
Cry
they poop and cry
at first.
That's right.
Yeah, damn new party members. Well, welcome to the party, new party member.
Sophia,
that's right. So you've been busy doing the dad thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is tremendous and far more important than this. But we have business to attend to. It is time to talk a little bit of Greyhawk. And we're going to get with the program, if you will, the current thing. It's the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons this year. 1974 was officially published. It had been, built and tinkered with in 73. But we're just going to do a little kind of a pop culture discussion, just for fun, talk about, our favorite kind of memories. And I stumbled across this article the end of January in the Saturday Evening Post written by Troy Brownfield. I bet we could post the link to it in the, episode notes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called 50 Years of Dungeons & Dragons, 10 Big Moments. And we've added a moment, and other things will probably pop up. So I thought, let's just walk through this. And maybe we could start before we get into these 10 big moments of like, what has D&D meant to each of us, over the years? I started in 82, and we've talked about this a little bit, so I won't bore you with my timeline. But I did start with the Moldvay, Keep on the Borderlands box set, basic edition, in 1982 with crayons and dice and all of that cool stuff. And it's meant friendships, friendships and snacks. I've eaten a lot of snacks playing D&D over the years, but still continues today. Friendships, people like meeting you. I met you on the internet.
That's right.
You joined one of our games that we streamed, and now we're doing a podcast together. So to me, D&D is relationships and friendships. And so that's, the main thing I'm most grateful for to, EGG himself, to Mr. Gary Gygax, for his invention. Him and Dave Arneson's invention has brought me much joy and friendship over the years. And I took a lot of years off. I rediscovered D&D through Twitch back in like December 2017, got sucked into the streaming vortex, learned 5th edition, and the rest is history. But I've made so many really wonderful friends, particularly since rejoining the active gaming roles. So that's kind of where D&D and I are, what it means to me. What about you, man? What does D&D mean to you over your time playing?
I've played D&D far. My history with D&D is far shorter than yours. I was exposed to, I grew up playing Warhammer Fantasy. I was familiar with those kinds of games. But I had a gaming group in early 2000s, and we played all sorts of things, Call of Cthulhu and all sorts of things. But it was in that group that I was exposed to Pathfinder. Because they said something about a fourth edition, which nobody liked, and Pathfinder was the way to go. So I was exposed to Pathfinder, and then life happened, went to college, got a job. And then once I got a job, I'm like, hey, I'm not studying all the time. I can look back into this D&D thing
And I have money to spend on
and
books
have money to spend
and
on
dice.
books and dice. Absolutely. So, and then I heard that, oh, there's this fifth edition thing that people like. So got into that. And it was from there that I found out that there are older editions that are perhaps just as fun. And so now I like to say that I run Old School Essentials, or so I run BX Moldvay, or but I play fifth edition. So and to, what does this all mean to me? Well, part of it is it means friends. Part of it means family time, because I have had a game with my two young boys for 3 years, and this is we look forward to, they look forward to it, and they're constantly, Daddy, Daddy, when are we going to play D&D? I want to find out what happens next. And so that's great. And it also means an outlet for creativity for me. So a place, a world that I can control, a world that's mine, a world that I can explore and escape, escape the stress of life and work, and go to a far off realm where things are probably far worse there than they are
Certainly
here.
more dangerous than my current existence, yeah.
So that's what it means to me. It's family time, it's friends, and it is an outlet, a hobby to keep me sane.
Yeah.
Because all work and no play makes Matt a dull boy.
Right. Yeah, I would like to second that creative outlet. That's a big deal to me too. I didn't even think about that. But food and friends, leave it to me, the Hobbit. Yeah, so okay, so that kind of sets the table a little bit. It kind of blows my mind that D&D's been a thing for 50 years, because in my mind D&D didn't start until I discovered it in 1982, but it turns out, so the first item in this article, item number one, 1974, Welcome to the World. So Gygax and Arnesen are kind of like mini wargaming buddies, and they come up with a role-playing game for individual characters versus like armies and legions and groups and kingdoms and things. And this notion of having an official or a referee, we call them a DM, a dungeon master, kind of officiate or sort of narrate while the players tell the tale through their individual characters. I think the mechanics of the game being driven by dice rolls is just so, you just don't know what's going to happen. Even though, the higher you advance your characters and your skills, even back in BX and expert, the greater chances you'd have of success based on die rolls. But it's still, at the end of the day, the one is still always out there, critical miss, but it, I love that the game is driven by chance
That's right.
to a large extent. Chance and storytelling versus very, very structured, railroaded sort of thing, like a video game tends to be.
And OD&D, as we call it now, original D&D, very rules light.
Yes, yeah, we've
So that
certainly
means
over-engineered this bad boy, haven't we?
very rules light, and that really required the dungeon master to be able to really make up rulings. You want to do this? Well, I have to invent a rule now.
Right. You have to figure out how will that work mechanically so that it makes sense and is fair and is repeatable. Yeah.
and because the rules are so light, it made it a very adaptable game.
For sure. Because it's, and by adaptable, right? Any setting, any types of characters,
That's right.
any player, it's very, very adaptable. How many times you hear even today, hey, it's your table, play it your way. And that's still a core value of Dungeons and Dragons, even though it's been highly engineered. They've kind of backed off of that with fifth edition. When you compare it to maybe 3.5 or 4, that were probably the pinnacle of over engineering the rules. But at the end of the day, it's still your table. And it's one of the things that always sticks in my mind. And I don't remember where I read it or where I learned it. But, you know, the setting of Greyhawk, there's a lot of lore, a lot of canon, there's a lot of structure to it, but there's also a lot of not structure. There's a lot of green space in the world that you can make your own. And that was what Gary wanted. He wanted to be a sandbox so that you could play the kind of game you wanted to play with the characters and the setting and the tales you wanted to tell.
And as we're talking about the history of D&D, and we're looking at this first point that 1974, the publication of Greyhawk of Dungeons and Dragons, Greyhawk, according to Wikipedia, the early development of Greyhawk was in 72, before the publication, because this comes from
Right.
Gary's
Because it comes from
table.
Gary's table, his game, yeah.
So
And in fact, yeah, go ahead.
Greyhawk existed before the publication
Of Dungeons and Dragons,
of
yeah.
D&D.
Yeah, it got kind of built in 73, the publications. But and before that, Arneson's world of
Right,
Blackmoor
Blackmoor, that's
was
right.
cruising. That was about 1970. So, kind of cool that the settings were actually in place. And if you want to go
Or
one
one
lane
step, yep.
further, Ed Greenwood was
That's right.
already
I'm thinking the same
percolating,
thing. That's
yeah,
right.
the Forgotten Realms in the 60s.
That's right.
There are sketches and maps. And in fact, for GaryCon, I scored one of the last tickets to Ed's and Anna's and Jay Scott's seminar about maps and classic maps and old maps. And it's going to be Ed. So the maps, capital T, capital M.
That's
Very, very stoked for that. But at any rate, yeah. So the settings predate the publication of the game. Jumping back on the article, they list here that in 74, TSR was established, which was, let's see, what was that called? Tactical Studies Rules, was the company that Gygax partnered with Don Kay so that they could publish the game. In 1974, it was published. So D&D is born, air quote, to the public, in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, the Gygax homestead, if you will. The next thing they list here is Gen Con. So
What is for
1976, what's that?
those of us playing the home game, what is Gen Con?
Yeah, so Gen Con, in 1968, Gygax started running this, what he called the Lake Geneva War Games Convention. The first year of the gaming convention ran in Lake Geneva. And it moved around various Wisconsin cities. In 1976, TSR acquired the conference, and D&D had kind of started to filter in, and they shortened the name of it to Gen Con, and the show has just grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. Peter Adkinson eventually bought it, and it's been in Indianapolis since 2003, and that's like a 60,000 to 80,000 person event. I mean, it's gargantuan. They utilize the Indianapolis Convention Center, Lucas Oil Stadium. So for you sports ballers, that's the home of the Indianapolis Colts, the NFL franchise. So that's a 65,000 to 70,000 seat arena. They put the gaming tables out on the floor of that. All the hotels are booked and then some. And it's a to me, it's a marvel. But it started as Gary's Lake Geneva Wargaming Convention, TSR shortened the name to Gen Con, and it's still going today. I was at Gen Con in 2018, and it was overwhelming, the volume of humanity. A little bigger than I enjoy. I've since discovered GaryCon, which we can talk about that in a little bit. And I prefer that very much because it's about a 3,000 per person event. So that gets us to 76, 77. And in 77, more versions kind of come alive. We find the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, right? We've had Basic. There was an Expert set, if you remember the boxes, right? Basic included the Caves of Chaos. Expert set had the Isle of Dread. It was a blue box.
Now let's talk about why the this existed this way. Gary wanted to update the rules, change the rules,
Add
that's not the
things
right,
that
add things,
expanded the mechanics. Yeah.
especially for tournament play. Because it home play and tournament play requires a set of rules to cover all these situations. You can't just have referees making rulings like in
Right.
your
Yeah. Everything has to be consistent. Yep. By
and
tournament.
without getting into it, there were politics going on with Arneson. And so Arneson co-owned the name Dungeons and Dragons. And so the line from this point onward, the line Dungeons and Dragons is a different game than Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. And the basic set comes out, which is Holmes Basic first. And Holmes Basic, that's the blue one. And that one, it's really setting up. There is no expert set for that one because it's intending to set you on the path to what's the word? Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. So what they
Right.
did with Basic is they just took OD&D, streamlined all of those little brown books and all the supplements into one game, and then simplified the mechanics a little bit.
And there was your Holmes Basic.
And that's Holmes, and that's Holmes Basic, and then, yeah. So, and then in 1980, you get Moldvay Basic, with the Keep on the Borderlands.
Right. Little, it says here, right, a little more novice friendly, versus the advanced, which gets very, very crunchy. The introduction of
Crunchy.
crunchable mechanics and the introduction of the core rule books, each written by Gary between 77 and 79. This would be, of course, the beloved Player's Handbook, the DMG, Dungeon Master's Guide to the Monster Manual.
And that threefold book structure has been followed since first edition. And so when we and then so Advanced Dungeons and Dragons is what we call first edition, and people know this listening. And so you could say that the current version of D&D is Advanced Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition.
Fifth edition, right? It's AD&D fifth edition, shortened to 5e.
Yep.
The expert set, I think it's fun to note, David Zeb Cook wrote that. There was a Menzner revision.
Yep. And
But by
so
then, by now you're talking into the 80s. By 83, Menzer did his thing. And now AD&D has really taken off
that's right.
by this time.
And so in this and so then we refer to the different basic editions as the Moldvay Basic and Cook is Cook's expert is called BX. And then once Menzer gets a hold of it's called Beckme now. And because it's slightly
Beckme, right.
different because now it goes not just to level 14, now it goes to level 20, and in the early, and then with the finishing up with the rule cyclopedia, it can get it can it itself can get pretty crunchy at times too. But that's a different stream than your advanced stream.
So AD&D. Right, you get the three core rule books: Player's Guide, Dungeon Master's Guide, Monster Manual. In 89, the second edition
Oh,
of
before you get to,
AD&D, right?
but and don't forget, we have that there's other books that come out like Unearthed Arcana, which kind of give you new rules, new classes.
Yeah, let's find, we've got a handy timeline in this article, and I skipped a kind of an important thing that I remember as a kid, 1983, and this probably predates you, my friend.
Oh, yes.
Dungeons and Dragons appears as a Saturday morning television cartoon animated.
Did you watch this show?
I watched the hell out of that show because I
What
had
did you
been
think?
playing D&D for, a year or whatever. And I watched it like religion. And it was tremendous in my opinion. There was the little DM guy, kind of like a Yoda little figure who would kind of beep in and beep out at key moments. There was a barbarian, and this was part of kind of promoting Advanced Dungeons and Dragons because of the expanded classes. There was a cavalier, there was a ranger,
Right.
there was an acrobat, there was a wizard, there was a, what was the one girl? And there was a little short barbarian guy. They had a little unicorn buddy. And so D&D kind of enters pop culture, right? Because back in the day when you were playing D&D as a kid, and I was 14 when I started, it was not like that was not what the cool people did, right? Caught a lot of heat for being a real tool bag, for playing D&D, and now look how cool we are. But 83, man, that was a big deal. D&D hits the TV airwaves. I'm trying to see how long. 3 seasons. Yeah, 3 seasons. So they even had some little collectible toys and things that that went along with that. So that was kind of a cool deal. Spells, the whole shoot and match. So very, very cool. And you could probably catch those episodes on YouTube. It is at this point where we start to expand some of the settings that are available.
Yeah.
Right?
19 what
Greyhawk is yeah,
1980
launched in 80,
and then
and you get the box set.
yep. And well the isn't the folio first? When does the folio come out? I
Well, the
think the
Greyhawk
folio
campaign setting is an 80, yeah.
yeah. So the folio is 80 and isn't the box set 83?
I think you're right. Yep, I think you're right.
And then you and then yeah. And when did and then you have what's next on the list? So you
So
have
the major setting change
next
that
major
like you
setting.
can do D&D in different places, not Greyhawk, is Dragonlance, Kryn.
Dragonlance in
The
1984.
novels, right? The trilogy, the Night trilogy, Dragons of Autumn Twilight, Dragons of Winter's Night or Winter Night, Dragons of Spring Dawning.
And
And they
what
set
did
D&D in Kryn.
that do for the game? For
Well, the novels were incredibly popular, and that really the module Dragons of Despair, published by TSR in 84, just because of the familiarity with Dragonlance, brought a whole new crew of players to the game, all the Dragonlance fans. So brilliant marketing strategy, if you will. So Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman, actually it was Tracy and his wife Laura who created the setting Kryn, and then Margaret partnered with Tracy, Margaret Weiss, Tracy Hickman on the novels. And now at the time of this article that we're kind of citing here, this 50 years of D&D on Saturday Evening Post in January, says there have been over 190 novels have been released by various authors in the dragon under the Dragonlance
Wow.
umbrella. 190 stories.
Goodness.
16 were written by Weiss and Hickman, including one released last year, 22 million plus copies of the 16 novels written by Weiss and Hickman. So the first real foray into a whole new setting. Pelennor is also launched in 84. And then in 85, we have some interesting things. Lankmar campaign setting appears. And then Oriental Adventures, D&D's first real, I feel like, attempt to try and tie itself to modern humanity with content, right? The Oriental Adventures, trying to tap into like the history of the samurai and such things. 85 is also the Unearthed Arcana is released, and it's an interesting time in the business. Right about that time, or 82, Gary goes out to California to start to create a D&D movie, and he turns the day-to-day operations over to the Bloom Brothers in Lake Geneva. This is a TSR I'm referring to. He goes to California, starts working on this movie, starts to find out a couple of years later that the business is not doing well. They're dragging in big piles of money, but they're leaking bigger piles of money. And so back to Lake Geneva to, swoop in and kind of save the day. Manages to get the Bloom Brothers out of the business. Does this by hiring a business partner, who cleverly, the business partner, according to Wikipedia, buys up the stock options from the two Blooms, making her the majority owner, and begins to take control of the TSR business and shuts Gary's content creation side down. And so he leaves the business, sells the shares of the stock, and leaves the business. So to me, 1985 is when this happens. That's a big holy smokes moment in Dungeons and
Right.
Dragons because it's original. One of its original creators, right? Gary Gygax, Dave Arneson. Gary leaves the company that publishes D&D.
That's right.
And it's Lorraine Williams is the business partner that he hires, who promptly buys up those stock. Again, very shrewd businesswoman by whatever you think of her. Made a situation that Gary needed to step away. And so he did. But D&D, the brand, the game, the fans, powers on, and part of it, an ironic twist of fate, right in the article, 1985. And I don't know, when were you born? I'll just go ahead and ask it, dude.
86.
Yikes. So 1985, you weren't even here for the Satanic Panic.
Nope.
Big program on 60 Minutes, right? D&D is, the devil's work. Ed Bradley does this big expose. I'm using my air quotes. You could feel the power of that, right?
I can feel the power of your
How
reports.
awful D&D is, how it's influencing our youth. There's this disappearance of this kid, and they're trying to lay the blame, squarely at the feet of Dungeons and Dragons for suicides and, satanic worship. And I remember my mom asking me, "You guys aren't going out in the woods with sticks and fighting like you got swords." I remember that, conversation. And I was like, "Well, who does that? We're just sitting around the table eating potato chips and ice cream and rolling dice." But Gary Gygax was on the segment, kind of defended the product. But yeah, the Satanic Panic.
That's right.
Yeah, and interesting, one of the key opponents, the article lists this Thomas Radecki, founder of the National Coalition on Television Violence, would later be convicted and sentenced to prison for really bad things. Using a drug for youth program to do very bad things.
What's interesting to me about this part of the discussion is the Satanic Panic is a thing. Most people who've been gaming for a long time that I've heard had conversations with remember the Satanic Panic, and I think this is funny because we don't talk about our real life stuff here very often, but you're a Catholic and I am a Lutheran minister, and so here we are, two very religious people on a
Pretty
D&D
hardcore D&D fans, man.
hardcore D&D fans. So thankfully this ship has sailed.
But what that did was it brought so much attention, right? There's no such thing as bad media. There you go. There's an example of it.
Well, and it actually affects the game. Why, a creature from the hells? What is it called?
A
A
devil, a fiend, a
fiend,
demon.
right? So we hear this. It's a fiend. The basic line of D&D, basic and Beckme. There are no demons. There are no fiends. None. So that's because this is the kid-friendly version. There's no
They wanted to
D&D.
kind of whitewash it, keep it safe. I got you. So here's a cool thing this article brings up that they, again, this is like top 10 moments in 50 years of D&D. So it's 1987, and the little tagline is "Nobody forgets Drizzt." Drizzt Do'Urden shows up. Drizzt is a character in the Forgotten Realms novels, 1998, The Crystal Shard, R.A. Salvatore. Why does this matter? And we're talking about it back in 1987. Well, Forgotten Realms becomes the next new Dungeons and Dragons setting. And oh my, did that take off? That's probably the default. I know it's the fifth edition default setting. Much, much, much content has been published in fifth edition set in the Forgotten Realms. That's not to say there haven't been other things done in the older settings and even a kind of a throwback. It's set in the Forgotten Realms, but it's a collection of 5e adventures. It's called
Yawning Portal.
Yawning Portal. Yeah, it has like five, six classic, Greyhawk adventures. But yeah, so 1987, Ed Greenwood's Forgotten Realms, which again had been knocking around in Ed's mind back in the 60s. So now you have DMs can set their adventures in Waterdeep, Icewind Dale, Neverwinter, Cormyr. And it is an absolutely awesome, awesome game setting, fantasy world, so rich with lore. And can't say enough awesomeness about what Ed did there and how free he is with his attention and with his content and how well he interacts with the community to this day.
And he's still publishing stuff for
And
it.
he's still writing books and publishing things.
You can go on to the DMs Guild right now and look up, I what is it, like the Red Wizards of Thay, like Thay, there's a book on Thay, there's stuff on there that he's still contributing and publishing for, which is
And he's still collaborating with other independent
creators.
game designers and creatives. Yeah, it's really, really cool. And I got the chance to meet Mr. Greenwood last year at my first Gary Con. And what a kind, humble, just nice, nice fellow. I remember we were setting up a game in Cormyr, a home game, and I pinged him on Twitter and I said, "Hey, I'm creating a character. He's from a city in Cormyr. What would be some proper surnames for this city that I could choose for my character, and he hit me back with like a dozen different surnames from this specific town in Cormyr. So that, you know, he's just very accessible, and I love that about him, just very down to earth. And he looks just like Elminster in my mind, right? He's got long white hair, long white beard, and yeah, Baldur's Gate is part of the Forgotten Realms that all came out of there, and of course the Crystal Shard and the Dark Elf trilogy. That features Driss Duerden, Wulfgar, Brunnor Battlehammer. What a tremendous series of books that R.A. Salvatore has written, featuring set in the Forgotten Realms with the Dark Elf. Yeah, very, very cool. So that's Forgotten Realms hits in 1987, 1989, second edition. What was the point of that? Like, everything's cruising. We got big settings. We got Dragonlance. We've got Greyhawk. We have now Forgotten Realms. Why do we need a second edition?
I heard this. I heard this from the guys who made it. I heard it on Jay's show.
Yeah. Seven
Lord,
Cook. Yeah.
yeah, and he was set. I guess not everybody likes Gygax's way of writing. I guess there were
Right.
rules were spread across all the three books. There's something in the Dungeons Master Guide, and there's some things over here in the and so they wanted to kind of just streamline it at first. And it eventually turned into a whole new edition. At least that's how Zeb Cook said
Yeah,
it.
yep. And there were things that changed, right? References to demons and devils. That's when they became fiends,
Fiends, yep.
right? Less sexually suggestive artwork. You could play evil-aligned characters, assassins, half-orcs. Those were removed. And then they got away from the pure sword and sorcery to
Yep.
more medieval feel, mythology. You remember the Deities and Demigods comes out.
Right.
And contains much real, I'm air quoting again, mythology, Sumerian mythos, Babylonian mythos, Cthulhu, which is fictional. But at any rate, a real shift in feel.
And around this time, almost every major setting experienced a in-game shakeup. I forget what the one is for Forgotten Realms, but there was a module
Oh, the Cataclysm.
that brought you from first edition to second edition, and there was a big realms shaking event, they call them,
Yeah.
with Mystara. At the same time, they had the Wrath of the Immortals, which completely changed the setting, and then in 19 what is it, 92, you had From the Ashes, which forever changed the Greyhawk setting.
Right.
So they were, you know, changes in the company and in the system eventually lead to changes in these in-game worlds as different creators
Absolutely.
get their hands
Well, and
on it.
let's talk about some settings, right? 1990, Spelljammer shows up. 1991, Dark Sun shows up. 92 is Al-Qadim. Ravenloft. Let's go back and do some gothic, Bram Stoker's Dracula. 1993, also Kelimar. And then Mystara is launched as a campaign setting with Planescape in 95. Second edition catches some revisions in 95. So a lot of changes and tweaks and growth. And during this time, 1987, TSR is really struggling financially at this point. They've tried to get into, because the Magic the Gathering got going with Wizards of the Coast in like 91. The collectible card game space really exploded. And TSR tried this dragon dice thing where they tried collectible dice, something a la Magic the Gathering, but with dice in it. It started and then it kind of flopped. Tailed off very quickly, and TSR really ran into some financial trouble. So, the gal Lorraine Williams sells TSR to Wizards of the Coast in Seattle in 1997. And then 2 years later, Hasbro buys out WotC, Wizards of the Coast. And so, Hasbro now owns the Dungeons and Dragons property and all that has gone with it over the years, all the Greyhawk, all the Gygax, all of that
Which
content comes with it.
bugs me, because in the latest movie of D&D, we'll get there, but in the credits it says based on Hasbro's Dungeons and Dragons. I'm
Yeah.
sorry, Hasbro, you didn't make Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
When you make a Superman movie, you say based on Gary Siegel and Joe Shuster's Superman. When you make a Batman movie, you make say based on Bob Kane's Batman. Even
Right.
though Bob Kane does not own Batman, nor do any of his
But he
descendants.
still came up with it. Yep.
And so you gotta say based on Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson's and
I share your opinion, my friend.
Ed Greenwood's, because it was set in the Forgotten Realms. Anyway,
I agree. I agree.
I love that if we have Hasbro employees listening to our show, we love Dungeons and Dragons, but give credit to where credit's due.
Fair enough.
Anyway, rant over.
So yes, continuing on. So that's the what they call in the article the age of acquisition. The big boost to that whole thing with Hasbro is their distribution channels are much, much larger than
Yep.
WotC or TSR. And so now you're finding D&D product becoming, again, I'll air quote, mainstream available Target, Walmart, box sets, production capabilities. So you could scale out to a much, much larger gaming audience,
And
global.
global, yep. And this is where changes in what is it? Changes in company equals changes in setting. Adventure Begins is published under WotC. By Roger E. Moore. So you get some more Greyhawk stuff published around this time, and then leading eventually to the final publication, the final setting book for Greyhawk, the Living Greyhawk Gazetteer, published in 2000 by
Oh,
WotC
good. Yes. Glad you mentioned that.
for third edition.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure we did not gloss over LGG, Living Greyhawk Gazetteer. We refer to that a lot here. We find a lot of good source information to discuss various podcast episode content. So, to the crew that put the Living Greyhawk campaign, the Gazetteer, all of that content out there, really kept Greyhawk alive. And I feel like they're kind of the bridge to the modern player because all of that content that came as the result of
Yep.
Gazetteer is now present, available, reprintable purchasing through DM's Guild. It's like the bridge back to the days. Like that stuff is out of print, but it's been kept alive. And thankfully, WotC has, I guess, permitted that because, again, they own the IP to all of that stuff.
Yep,
But
that's right.
that was
Well,
very cool.
and listeners might if listeners haven't listened to the episode with Gary Hollihan talking about his history with that's interesting, an interesting story to hear. But because the people who made the team that made the LGG didn't get the rules for third edition, it's remained basically system agnostic, mostly. Which
Which
is
is great.
great. So you can use it for fifth edition without any problem at all.
Do it all the
And
time.
then we had a blunder in 2000, didn't we?
Well, there was a movie made.
Yes.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's
But the
terrible,
first
dude.
D&D film, yeah. So Dungeons and Dragons is the name of the feature film. Big disappointment, smoked by the critics, didn't make its budget. Couple of sequels, still no good until. Let's just go ahead and skip over some stuff. And since we're talking about movies, but Honor Among Thieves 2023 release, I have to believe, I don't know what the financials are on that. Never looked, probably not gonna, but in my mind, has to be a success.
It underperformed. It did. It
Did
was
it?
a box office success. Or sorry, it was a critical success. So people thought it was a good movie. And even people who didn't want to like it after the WotC scandal, it said it was a good movie, but it underperformed and had a huge
Financially,
buffet.
okay.
But that there's whispers and rumors of another film.
Cool. I saw it. I finally saw it. I enjoyed it.
I thought it was a decent
It was
movie.
entertaining. I
Yeah.
didn't try to expect a lot out of it. I had a good time. It was fun. I'm not a big, I don't require all the silly comedy moments and things.
Right.
I'm a more of a serious D&D snob, I guess. Whatever,
But do you know
Like
what?
Nubscott, but
Do
it
you know
was
what?
fun. It was enjoyable. I enjoyed it, and I
Do you
recognized some stuff in it. It was D&D.
Yeah. Do you know what I think the coolest thing out of that movie was? The Red Wizards of Thay. Can we take the Red Wizards of Thay and just swap them for the Scarlet Brotherhood? Drop the Scarlet Brotherhood as it's printed
Yeah.
and just replace them with the Red Wizards of Thay. Can we do that?
That
Is
was
that
pretty cool. Yeah.
because I think the Red Wizards of Thay are pretty cool.
Very, very cool. So yeah, so Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves released last year. Very cool. Enjoyed it. So that was, that was nice. But there was some stuff that happened between 2000 and 2023. There was some addition. We kind of had third edition, then they had 3.5 in an attempt to make some quick improvements. Got super crunchy with, and by crunchy, just so many details and so many specific and unique things. You can create a character right down to the number of moles on their behind. There's like freaking tables for everything, right? Just overcrunch for many, certainly for me. I don't require or like that much crunch in my game, but I play D&D with some folks who do, and they love that stuff. Pathfinder kind of spun off from Paizo. Really fun system and very felt a lot like D&D 3.5, very crunchy, very mechanic heavy.
And the, don't forget the p at this around this time, they wanted to make sure the Dungeons and Dragons would live forever, and so they put it in the OGL.
Yeah.
They put the rules for 3.5 in the OGL, and that eventually led, without getting into the controversy, to WotC releasing the fifth edition rules into Creative Commons, which means that's the genie's out of the bottle now. Dungeons and Dragons fifth edition is Creative Commons, and all you have to do is cite the one sentence and you can use the whole rule book. Which means if WotC was to go under and Hasbro was to die and never was an official Dungeons and Dragons book to ever be published ever again, it would still live on because the rules are out there and usable. And that's a really, for gamers, that's a really awesome turn of events.
Yeah, for sure. That just keeps in perpetuity now the ability to access the mechanics and the settings and create your own content with that, as long as you cite that in your material, and you can do that. So, fifth edition releases in 2014. Kind of coincided with D&D's 40th anniversary.
That's
Fifth
right.
edition is kind of the present edition. I know they're talking about D&D 1. There was some real stink about what that was all going to be, that also aligned with the licensing concerns.
Yep.
But fifth edition is a lot of classic D&D folk, grognards, if you will, right? They think fifth edition is just kind of cartoony compared to, and I DM almost entirely in fifth edition, and it's really hard to kill a character, because of the things that characters have and can do and the powers and all of that. But the game isn't designed with as much of that possibility for death in mind as it used to be. Man, characters used to be like fragile. First level basic or OD&D character was like, good luck getting a second level, good luck with that.
Oh well, I'm think about it. An OD&D or basic or AD&D, some classes have 1d6 hit dice. You roll that sucker, you rolled a four. All right, great. You maybe have a constitution bonus of plus one. So now you have 5 hit points.
Woo.
Buddy with a bow rolls to hit you. He hits. He rolls his d6. He rolled a six.
You're
You're
dead.
dead. That does not happen in fifth edition.
I don't know if fifth edition brought about the death saves,
Not sure.
or if that was from previous edition, but it the characters became a lot more bubble wrapped. And also, D&D by now is a pretty mainstream, cultural piece, Twitch, people streaming.
But before that, right after fifth edition came out in 2014, something happened in 2016 which gave D&D a gigantic boost. Stranger Things.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Showing up on Stranger Things did not hurt. Yeah.
Right? I
Yeah.
mean, here's
And I'll
these.
tell you what will hurt the D&D movies is the Lord of the Rings series.
Oh,
Because those are so
yes.
well done. Like, good luck D&D movies. Talk about a
But
tough benchmark.
good D&D, but the Lord of the Rings, how many people like myself would grew up and went through high school and early high school, and those movies came out, and now you want to play a game where I can have
Yeah, you
adventures
can
like
set a
that,
game in Middle Earth, yeah.
you know, or anyone,
Tremendous.
you
Yeah.
know.
Tremendous. So they throw some stats at us at the back end of this article, right? We're in fifth edition. People are streaming just hours and hours and billions of hours of D&D streaming on Twitch. One of the big changes, 2017, D&D Beyond shows up. And it's like the online version of D&D source books, all their content is there. There's so many things that make running a game simpler. All the technology innovation, you could roll dice through D&D Beyond. You can, create and store limitless characters if you purchase certain subscription levels. And so you have this subscription model where you subscribe to D&D Beyond versus purchasing books. Now, I am a book person. I like how they smell. I like how they feel. I need to have books in my house, much to the chagrin of my wife. But I will tell you that D&D Beyond is, and I fought getting it, and man, is it a wonderful thing to use. Now it's only fifth edition, and it's going to stay edition forward, I believe. I don't know if there's any plans to be able to use older editions on D&D Beyond, but all the stuff is there, all the books that have been published in fifth edition, Eberron, Spelljammer, Planescale, all the stuff that's been released in the past few years, tremendous, tremendous resource.
And along with that, D&D, because of the COVID epidemic, we were all stuck at home with nothing to do. And so D&D took a huge boost from that. And
Well,
now
they were smart because they released a lot of free content on through D&D Beyond during COVID.
and now you don't if you there are so many VTTs, Roll20 and Foundry and well, and you know, and
And D&D Beyond's coming up with its own VTT.
that's right.
So that D&D Beyond is tied to it. It's currently, I believe it ties to Roll20.
Well, and don't forget, D&D Beyond originally started as an independent company, and
Correct.
now
And WotC purchased it.
Watsi Per, and so that brings us to the final point there, 2024 and beyond. 2024, it's the 50th anniversary. Fifth edition, as you've mentioned, is getting a rules update, and that's it's from everything I've heard, it's still basically the same game. It's just some updates and some tweaks, or at least it's backwards compatible, because it'll be the same enough. I'm thinking it's a second to first edition kind of thing. The other thing is, there was this a video. If you go to Professor Dungeon Master on YouTube, he has a video analyzing this article this guy wrote called "The Golden Age of RPGs is over." Now you WotC, it looks like, has decided that they want to try to snag this growing online digital market with a VTT and with a greater emphasis on digital products, digital play, digital. They think that that's the where they're going to make the most money, and they're a business, and they have to go where the money goes, and they're still going to produce books, but to a lesser extent, because they think the money's going to be there. And so the future of Dungeons and Dragons has now given birth to the situation where there's all these small little independent publishers that produce versions of D&D. You've got Old School Essentials for BX. You've got Osric for first edition. You've got Pathfinder for third edition. You've
Well, think
got
of all the creators publishing settings and content
send for
for
all
fifth
that.
edition,
Oh yeah.
Drakenheim
Oh yeah.
and all the Sly Flourish content and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. And so as we look at as we look forward to what do you think whole D&D, where do you think D&D is going to go in the future? I think D&D in the future is going to look a little different than what we're used to, because I think we're going to see the days of early to of the 2020s, where everybody was playing fifth edition, so to speak,
Right.
are done. Because now, what are you playing? Well, I'm playing Tales of the Valiant. Oh, I'm playing one D&D. Oh, I'm playing, and everybody's going to be. So this means, at least I think, Greyhawk, you're going to find Greyhawk games in any setting or any system
Right,
that's
rule system, right?
that you want. And I think that's where the future is leading us, to multiple rule systems. But I'm not an expert on these things. What do you think?
I think we were talking about this before we kind of hit the record button, but the continued conversion to digital content, more and more of everything is going to be all online. D&D Beyond is, as we said, creating its own virtual tabletop. Their content is available through Roll20. Like, I'm running the Against the Giants in a game, and I purchased everything right in Roll20, the maps, all that stuff. And it actually, you're purchasing Tales from the Yawning Portal is what you're purchasing. But all the maps are right loaded in already. So I think that continued expansion into digital is just gonna, I'm an old dude, I like my books, but boy, digital is super handy. When I was streaming on the Wily Hobbit channel, having D&D Beyond as a resource. If we encounter a particular monster, I'd pop it up on D&D Beyond. I've got everything right there. If I need to research a spell very quickly, I'm not leafing through books. I'm just, looking through D&D Beyond. It's a game changer.
Oh yeah. Well,
When
look
you're,
at
especially how many people play virtually versus around tables, that digital thing is really changed things.
especially in fifth edition.
Right.
Look at don't forget, we also, the popularity of D&D, also things like Critical Role.
Oh boy, yeah.
But I'm thinking of Critical Role because they're an in-person game. But
Right.
what do they all have? A tablet with D&D rolled with D&D Beyond up to
Yeah.
run their character sheets,
Yeah.
because it's easier to have the character sheet on D&D Beyond than it is to have a
Oh,
physical one.
Matt, I had my in-home or in-person round the table game was last night. I took my laptop. Had all my stuff on. We're playing in Erdi. I had all. We were playing fifth edition D&D. We're playing in Erdi, which is a Trollord Games setting, which Stephen Chenault was a friend and supporter of Gygax in the early 2000s. They kind of got linked up with Trollord Games, and now that through Castles and Crusades, Trollord Games, there's a great example of a small company publishing a bunch. They just got the rights to publish a bunch of Gygaxian content.
Tons.
What were we talking about? Just totally went down a rabbit hole.
That's fine. This is
Last
the
night I'm
yeah.
playing Erdi D&D 5e at a table with snacks on my laptop.
My
And we're still
laptop.
using dice. We got a map and dry erase and minis and all that. But the resources are all online. I'm using World Anvil, the Erdi site, for the maps. And so digital, I think, is really, Captain Obvious moment here for our listeners. I think digital is probably like the internet's probably gonna stay being a thing. I think it's gonna stick. But I mean, gaming content digitally is just going to continue. What I hope I don't see is a negative impact from artificial intelligence. That scares me, both on the art side and on the creator side. This, you just use your phone and it starts to try to decide what word you're going to use next. Chat, what is that? Chat EPT or something?
ChatGPT. I mean, I mean, I mean,
Yikes.
I use ChatGPT, but I use it for like, give me 50 names that sound fantasy-like. Go.
Right.
And it just generates a list of names, especially as a DM. But with any sort of online tool, there's proper use and then there's misuse, right?
Right. Yep.
With anything, internet, anything in life, there's a proper use of a thing and a misuse.
Yeah.
So 50
So
years
that
of D&D.
50 years, yeah, and I hope it stays around for, I mean, it's not going to vanish, but I hope it continues to grow and evolve and include people. To me, at the end of the day, it's about getting around the table, having a snack, telling a story, and have everybody at the table engaged in the way that fits them best. And the stat they put out here in this article, an estimated 50 million people are playing D&D. That was in 2021. And 45% of that crew is 30 and older. So the sort of the older edition folks like myself, sales of the game are over $1 billion.
50
So
million. That's a lot of
I
people.
just hope there's a way for it to continue. Yeah.
Yeah, and here at Greycast, we hope that when you get with your friends around a table or a computer screen, that you would consider the Gygaxian world of Greyhawk as
Yeah.
a place to occasionally visit or to visit all the time as you are
Absolutely.
making these games.
Go old school. And hey, if you have ideas for episodes, we've gotten a few good ones from the world outside of our little Zoom call here where we record. So if you've got ideas for episodes, we have a Discord channel that I'm sure Mateus could put a link to in the he's the
Sure.
technical expert, so I'll just commit him to that without knowing if it can be done. Or hit us on
And
Twitter
Twitter.
at Greycast576,
Yep.
and let us know what you think or what you think we should be talking about or individuals you think would make great guests. And man, that we were going to do a kind of a quick episode, and we've done the opposite of a quick episode. We've actually been going for almost an hour. So much for that quick episode.
Look at us making content.
Making content, man, on the interwebs, digital. There you go. So if we can do it. Right, a Lutheran minister and an old crusty Catholic. So can you. All right, well, thanks for sticking with us tonight. 50 years of D&D. Pretty cool, pretty interesting, and we will see you out there on an adventure somewhere. Please be kind and be safe, and we'll see you next time on Greycast.
You've been listening to the Greycast podcast, where we explore the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. Mateus and I are excited to share our passion for the world of Greyhawk with each of you. We'll drop episodes every other Monday featuring all things Greyhawk. Please refer us to all your cool, nerdy Greyhawkian friends and allies, even your most hated enemies at the gate. You can find our podcast on Spotify and be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Greycast576 to keep up with Greycast. Until next time, remember, it's a dangerous business going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to.